Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 28th of January 2016, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you today from the GR Studios right here in Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee, where from his book Velvet Elvis, Reclaiming Christianity, we say with Rob Bell, the moment God is figured out with all nice neat lines and definitions, we are no longer dealing with God. And here from his living room in Houston, Texas, is that great unteacher, the heretic of all heretics, and the high potentate of the gospel revolution, Mr. Michael Williams. G'day, Michael. How the heck are you?
G'day, Barris. I'm doing great, and I want more titles. You don't have enough on here.
Whoa.
I'm not Glenn, mate. You got to go to Glenn for all those titles. You're not getting them from me. Yeah. I don't think you do. You've got to work hard to get a title out of me, mate.
Didn't deserve them anyway, did I?
and what's more, mate, I'm going to have to teach you to say g'day.
G'day? I know how to say g'day.
No, you don't. Just like a bloody American, arrogant, self-opinionated. Oh, my gosh.
Well, now we've heard that before.
Firstly, I've got to tell you how you spell g'day.
G apostrophe D A.
D-A. G'day. Oh, mate, we are so... If you're wondering why... We haven't started drinking today yet, family. If you're wondering why we're having so much fun, it's because we just spent a weekend together up in Calgary, Alberta.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yes, and what a trip that was, Bears. I flew up on Thursday, and since you weren't speaking until Saturday morning, you flew up on Friday. And wow, you got stuck in a 100-year storm that was traveling through the country and got stuck in Nashville, Tennessee. My goodness. But finally got off the ground, but you turned into a whole day travel. So tell everybody about your travel day, number one.
Well, it was a 22-hour day. I was up at 1. I like to get to the airport early, and I had to go via Walmart to pick up some headphones. But anyway, I got to the airport and bright and early, and by the time that the plane was scheduled to go, 8:30 a.m., the place was snowed in. So the airport was closed. They had the snow plows out. And I've never been in this situation before, so I rang Jeff Roberts, and Jeff, what do we do? And then I rang you, anyway, you just treated it like it was typical another day at the office, and told me to get my on that plane, and regardless of when I arrived, so I did, and at 10:30, we ended up getting off the ground. I flew into Denver, and the lady in the customer service. I sort of was making an excuse for having to be rescheduled. And I said, you know, the snow kept us in Nashville. And she said, yeah, and I just heard they lost electricity. Now, Michael, I don't know a lot about airports, but I'm pretty sure you can't run one without electricity. And so anyway, it just went from there to putting my key in the door at the hotel at about 11:30 at night.
Wow.
And it was a long day, but oh, my gosh. There is something about Canada. I was so sad to leave and so glad to get home to my Laura. But there's something about Canada that just invigorates me.
In fact, seeing you on this morning and seeing you so invigorated after such a long and fairly arduous weekend, especially with the travel. But, you know, the folks in Canada are always – they always add so much to us. I mean, we're there to – share with them, but what they do for us in return, just with their the presence of their faces there. Goodness gracious, what a delightful group, and always a wonderful experience. We never know what's going to happen, but it's always good. So we're very grateful to you guys, and for those of you in Canada that were part of the meetings, thank you so much. You were so gracious to Barris and I. Every moment was just marvelous.
I love those people up there. They are precious.
It was wonderful.
We had and I had a first in all of my preaching career, which I can't say on air.
Oh, yes. No, you can't.
There's only four people who know about it. You, Jeff, and Vic.
But it was averted. It was averted anyway. So it's nothing really to have to report, thank goodness, for you and for your listeners both.
Well, tell me, we're in a pledge drive month, aren't we?
This is our pledge drive for this quarter, yes.
Oh, I have got to tell you, when up in Calgary, you got me to read that letter from Moses Garter, and after we went through all of those pictures of what the gospel is achieving up there and what is being done to get the gospel out by this gorgeous family, this wonderful Garter family in Nakuru, Kenya. At the end of it, mate, I felt like cracking up. What happens over there is remarkable.
Yes, definitely. And we've got to figure out a way to send out to everybody this PowerPoint presentation that you were able to do there, and putting the pictures together. It'd be awesome if we were able to do that.
The new website will have it.
Oh, wonderful.
And we're not far away. I believe that it's not far away, and I know that we used to say a lot in the past, hey, new website's not far away. But this time, we got someone on it, and it's going to work.
Yes, we are within sight of seeing the completion of our new website. Now, this website that we are retiring has a history, and it has been an amazing history. It went up in 1997, and so we're dealing with one of the earliest ministry websites ever on the internet. Goodness, we were still doing tapes when we had this website produced and put up. It was really the brainchild of Dr. Leslie and Bobby Kaza, who we saw both of them at the meetings there in Calgary. That was your first time to meet Dr. Leslie, wasn't it?
And my first time to meet Wade Brewer.
Oh, yes. Both are people that I'd have to say you can't introduce either one of these. You have to explain them. So
that's good. I like that. Tell me, how's the pledge drive doing, Michael?
Well, we're going to have to get an update from Jeff Robertson.
Well, Jeff, you just heard it. How are we going?
All right, Mike. It's been a little slower this week than last week, and could really use a few more people to catch up here. But since last week, we have had Richard and Pat Salonen from Lorium, Michigan, donate to the cause. Mike and Joyce Camelotis in Mesa, Arizona. Paul Viggers in New Milton, Hampshire, England. And an anonymous donor from Edmonton, Alberta. Bud and Ruth Ramsey from Park River, North Dakota. Tom Tonsky in Canton, Ohio. Betty Cochran in Atoka, Oklahoma. Sean Smith in Foley, Alabama. And Amado Menya from somewhere in the United States. And then Wayne Card in London, Ontario. And that rounds out the list for this past week.
I just wanted to say to our folks, this is a value for value model that we run here. If you feel you've gotten value out of the podcast or value out of the Gospel Revolution, today we're going to be talking with Tony Blackman, and he tells a story, much like many of our folks do, Jeff. He talks about where he came from and how free he felt when he came out of it. We don't ask anybody to head in any direction. You don't have to believe like us. In fact, Laura bought me a shirt that it says, I don't want you to think like me. I just want you to think. So a lot of people think their way through the Gospel Revolution and into different areas. But if this has helped you become free to do anything, we're asking you to dip your hands in your pockets if you feel comfortable to do that, and just send us something in the pledge drive that's going to help somebody else just like you start on their journey of discovery of thinking for themselves.
Thank you.
Now, let me just let our family know that every new donor in this pledge drive, every single new donor is going to get a pharisectomy certificate stating that their inner Pharisee has been removed with surgical precision by the master and teacher himself, Mike Williams. Every new monthly pledge of between $10 and $50 will be awarded with official sponsor certificates. Every new monthly pledge of over $50 a month will be awarded with official producer certificates. We will call you one of our producers. Now, these are real producerships. When you see a movie produced, there is executive producers. These are the people who donate the most money into the project. And then you've got other producers, line producers, set producers, and all sorts of things. But these producerships are real, and we will authenticate and endorse these producerships whenever we're asked to. And you can put this on your business cards. I've got it on my business card, and you can use its authentic value wherever these real endorsements are accepted. Every monthly pledge of over $150 a month, every new one, or $1,800 annually will be awarded with an official executive producer certificate. These carry the same weight as the producer certificates. Flash them. Tell people how good you are, because you sure are good to us.
Exactly. And we do appreciate everybody. Thank you guys that have participated so far in the pledge drive. And you might as well just go ahead and call Jeff. He's going to call you anyway. So just go ahead and pick up your phone and get it over with.
Now, we have a packed show today that we just see now and then. People pop up like Bondi, Michael Bond, and Blanche, Michael Blanche. These are my Aussie names for these boys. And we just have to drop everything. I mean, I've got emails from Steve Davis. There's an email here from Ethan. There is something called The Gospelite by Philip D. Britton. I mean, I tell you, you'll cry when you read that. Yep. We've got this. Oh, I've got to do this one with Jody Lease. Jody Lease. She says, now I'm just reading from this quickly, and I just pulled this down as it came through my email box, but it was relayed to me by Jeff. And Jody is replying to one of her, is it her father or somebody in her family? Mm-hmm. She's saying, ha ha, now you are as messed up as your son. Obviously, this person had heard the gospel or listened to some of these tapes. And then she says, P.S., I'm sending this email off to them. The boys will get a kick out of it, Jody. And then when she wrote to Jeff, she said, hey, Jeff, the original email is from Wayne Lease, my dad. He is currently volunteering at NPH Orphanage in the Dominican Republic for 3.5 months with a week stop in a school in Haiti where my mum supports financially and helps run from Canada. The two of them are there to make sure things turn out right. Keep up the good work, Jeff. And, oh, Jody, you're cruel. You're worse than cruel. You're mean. She refers to us as, quote unquote, the other guys.
The other guys, yeah.
Et al.
I thought that.
Who was that? You? Who was that that said et al? You've just. And then she sent us this. It said, I think it was Wayne Lease, her dad, who wrote, I listened to the Pillars podcast, he means the Seven Pillars of Wisdom, on...
Now, this is the guy who is in Haiti, and he and his wife in mission work.
Good stuff. I listened to the Seven Pillars podcast on Freedom yesterday while waiting on flights. When I woke, as it was still dark, my head and soul were crying out, oh, my God. I never used to say, oh, my God. But now it's a regular prayer over and over. The GR guys need to put out a disclaimer that says, if you consider the gospel, it will put your head and soul through the meat grinder, and it is painful.
Yeah.
I guess that I'm not as free as I thought. Dad, wow.
Isn't that amazing? That's a letter from a father who is in, that he and his wife both are in the mission field, and writing back to their daughter who has embraced the gospel, and they're saying, what an impact it's making in their lives. You know, we've always said it's those people who are most dedicated in the evangelical part of Christianity that are most receptive to the gospel. Because these are people who have studied and have come up with the questions and not gotten any resolves or any answers. And what the gospel really does in the gospel revolution is that it addresses the questions that come up to those who have been seriously involved in Christianity, not passively involved. Then, you know, and the only thing we can say is thank God for those that have been so passively involved that it has not had the effect on them that it has many of the rest of us. So we're very grateful for this email and for Jody. Thank you for sharing it with. Thank you for sharing this email with Jeff and the other guys.
Now, as I said earlier, we've got this. I mean, a packed program, but we're just going to turn it over to your friend Tony.
We are.
Tell us a little bit about Tony.
Well, let me tell you about our guest on the show today. He is no stranger to radio work, Barris, and you'll be able to extract all of that out of him. Very faithful member of the Word of Faith movement years back, and some real tremendous experiences. He and I crossed paths right around the mid-90s, and it's been an ongoing friendship since then. Tony is the one that I've occasionally referred to doing the series of radio shows where we explored all of the instances in the Old Testament where the trumpet was blown, taking off from the last trump being blown at the cross. So I thought it was very important that we know why these trumpets were blown, because if the last one was at the cross, then we would know every reason the trumpet was blown was fulfilled. Just a couple of reasons that the trumpet was blown. One was the trumpet was blown for the reason that judgment was coming. For judgment, there was a long, loud, continuous blast. So it's almost like the Morse code, if you will, of the Hebrew people, that they knew what God was ready to do or what it was time for them to do. There was the trumpet that was blown for the in-gathering, for everybody to come into the temple. It was I think it was altogether about 25 reasons that they blew the trumpet. And then when we place those into the fulfilled category of the last trump at the cross, and remember Paul said, if the trumpet make an uncertain sound, how will the people know what to do? This is a very authentic and revealing way of finding out what was fulfilled at the cross. The understanding that comes out of the last trump and going back and studying all the reasons the trumpet was blown is so self-revealing. You don't even have to teach it. You just have to go back and see why the trumpet was blown and place the sound of the last trump as Paul does at the cross rather than some future event, once again, destroying all of what is known in Christianity as end time doctrine and placing all the fulfillment of law and scripture and the new creation at the cross. So let me introduce to you, Barris, this morning, Tony Blackmon, B-L-A-C-K-M-O-N, from Mobile, Alabama. Folks in the GR, this is someone who has contributed in a major way to where we all are today in the gospel by his participation and willingness to do whatever it took to help get the gospel out in his own right and to help me in any way that was possible. So, Barris Bartlett and Gospel Revolution, this is Tony Blackmon.
Well, hello, Tony Blackmon. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. It's been a great little visit over here, Houston. Back when Mike and I first met, something that I wanted to do is get this message out to as many people as possible. It's such great news, and it was freeing, and the internet was not where it's at today. So radio was what I thought was the best bang for the buck, and so Mike and I got together, and I worked with a local radio station who allowed us to put on a series of programs, recorded those programs. I still have them today. 46 episodes, mainly focused on the sacrifice, the things that happen with the high priest and obtaining the perfect sacrifice and all the ins and outs of that yearly ritual.
Tell me the Tony Blackmon story.
From the age of birth till probably 8 or 9, we would go to my uncle's church, who was a Church of God. It's Pentecostal. There was a lot of teaching of law and not much of grace. So let's get ourselves religious enough and good enough before God, and then the evidence of that would be speaking in tongues.
How did that church life impinge on your home life?
Well, there were certain people in the church more strict than others. My home wasn't as strict as probably what we were supposed to be. There were people in the church that weren't allowed to go to movies, refrained from wearing certain makeup or doing their hairs a certain way.
Was this one of those churches that taught if you wear earrings, they're stirrups for the devil to climb up into your brain?
Yeah. It was for those. My mother had a kind of a conflicting, you know, time with that. And she was a very pretty woman and kept herself well-groomed and just beautiful. And she didn't see anything wrong with that. So she would often, you know, kind of go against that policy.
So this is the general atmosphere in which you were brought. I was speaking to somebody in Canada named Wade Brewer. He was brought up in the UPC, United Pentecostal Church up there. Let me see. Baptism brought regeneration. And if you didn't speak in tongues, I think it's possible you couldn't make the rapture.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me this story about being in Sunday school, and his sister asked the question, if I go to the bowling alley, will I still be able to go up in the rapture?
Mm-hmm.
And the teacher said, well, look, it's possible that if you go up to the bowling alley but you don't cross the threshold, perhaps you may still make the rapture. And as he was saying this, it all flooded back to me, the repressive sect that I was brought up in, and I'm hearing you say the same thing. You know, the beliefs might differ, the doctrine might change, but damn, the religion never, ever changes, does it?
I was always having to get myself back right with God. I could be on my way to church and go down, and one of the things that was often encouraged is for someone, you know, at the end of the service to come up to the front and renew your relationship with God and get right. And I would go through this process of doing that many times in tears. And on the way back home, I could see a billboard of a pretty woman and think, well, she's pretty. And then all of a sudden I'm questioning, have I just gone over that threshold? Do I now need to get back right with God?
What a double-minded way in which to live. I mean, that's just horrible, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And as a child, one of the things that I enjoyed was going to the church camps.
Oh, I would have said the billboards. But okay, church camps. Church
I
camps.
Love the church camps, except for the time when, you know, you'd play ball all day and you go swimming all day. But at night, you know, you came back to the tent meeting, and it was almost a feeling of guilt if you weren't in tears and up front repenting. If you didn't have that emotional reaction, you would a lot of times think to yourself, am I serious? Is why am I not having that type of reaction?
So you had to switch from being happy and free in the day to miserable and self-reproachful in the evenings.
A lot of times, yes.
Dang.
Yes. So
how long were you with that group?
Well, I was there till I was probably 10. What made it doubly hard, and I love my uncle. He was the preacher. My uncle was the preacher. He often asked me what I wanted to do when I grew up, and I think my heart was saying I want to be a preacher, in the sense that as a young child of not knowing all these legalization that religion brings upon someone's heart. At that time, I had not felt that yet. I wanted to do it because I loved people. I want to let them know God loves them. Mm. And so from that point, I would say I want to be a preacher. As I grew older, I did not want to be a preacher in the sense that it brought people into condemnation. When I left that church...
What brought about leaving that church?
I was just young, and wherever my mom or dad went, they had been invited to go to another church that my mother's sister was going to, and it was an Assembly of God church. And it was basically, the best way I can describe it is Pentecostal light. It was sort of the same foundations, but they weren't as strict in certain legalistic things. Like, we could go to movies if we wanted to. That would be permitted. And they let the women wear a little bit more makeup. But there was still that, we're Jesus, we're teaching Jesus plus something. And you have to get that something, or the Jesus part wasn't good enough. So you had, there were still works involved.
Yeah, well, after all, Jesus did say, wasn't on the cross his last statement, wasn't it, it is nearly finished?
Yeah, nearly finished. No, yeah, you're right, it's finished, yes.
Mm. So how long were you at that church?
I was there probably till I was about 16, and then my dad had passed away when we were in that church, and so my mother found a good friend and companionship, and they were at a Word of Faith church in town, and so she visited that place, and we started going there, and it was non-denominational. It wasn't a Church of God or a Pentecost. It was just a church that taught a lot of the same things, but the faith movement was big in those days. This is mid-80s.
Now, you're in Alabama at this time?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So we started going there, I guess, mid-80s, and I would characterize it as being a Word of Faith type church.
How long after that did you meet Mike Williams?
About 7 or 8 years later.
Had you been in church all of your life then?
I have, and I visited in between times of going to the churches that I regularly attended. I would attend some churches of others. I went to a school that was Episcopal, and then I later went to a school that was a Church of Christ. I had Catholic friends that I would visit with them on occasion. I'm a kind of person that would ask questions. I kind of wanted to know, why do you think this way, or why do you think that way? All of the time before I met Mike, I had become the very monster that I did not ever want to become. When I say monster, I became extremely religious, judgmental.
Give us an example.
Well, here's one for you. At Halloween, I decided that Halloween was such a evil holiday, but I would turn that around and I would give out tracts to kids when they come to get candy. They got some tracts, and in my heart, I was thinking, I'm saving them. I'm helping them.
They didn't come next year, right? All that love was too much for them. So tell us about meeting Mike.
Well, leading up to the time I met Mike, I had gone through a very low time of really judging myself as harshly as I was beginning to judge other people. And I've always been somebody who would rather have the truth and not like it than to have a lie and accept it.
So what happened in your childhood at the camps where you were encouraged to hate, loathe, and despise yourself every night? Now this was becoming an autonomous behavior. You were doing it to yourself instead of some preacher having to do it. You were going the whole hog.
That's right. I was all in, and I realized that I was not measuring up. And so I had two choices to make. I could double down, or I can go to hell.
You actually got to that crossroads? Because the next question I want to ask is, how do you double down? What's that look like?
Well, it started with telling myself there's just no excuse for my behavior. I need to follow the law to the letter. And in that, I will find the ability to love myself.
So when Moses brought the tablets down from the mountain, the Israelis said, this shall be unto us our righteousness. That's pretty much what you said. If I can just keep this law, this will be good for me.
That's right. And the problem was, and this was a good thing, I was at least honest enough to myself to realize that I was failing in this area. I was not, I see a lot of times in religious-minded people, either they're honest with themselves and they find, well, I'm not measuring up to this law, or they sugarcoat it and make excuses for themselves and that they are measuring up to the law. But I had, I remember ordering a set of John Hagee tapes, and he was teaching the law. the Ten Commandments. And I would listen to them, and I really was doubling down on this. And it just was leading me to a very dark place because...
Because so you were living in a town with a lot of billboards, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I was on my way to Montgomery, Alabama to do a trade show. And I remember breaking down in the car and just confessing to God that I could not do this. And that if he finds that offensive, I was sorry. But I could not live up to these things. It's just to be honest with myself, it just was not happening. I could try it forever and would not be able to do that. And at that point, I just told God, I give up. And I was in a dark place for about a month. And there were some tapes that my aunt had given me on Mike Williams I'd had for several months. I just had not listened to them. They were just sitting on my shelf. And I guess about a month went by, and I grabbed one of those tapes on my way out to a trade show I was doing in Lafayette, Louisiana.
Big mistake.
Well, I put it in.
Huge.
And I listened to it, and I remember the title of the series was Sin Conscious that Mike did. And it really dove into the actual ceremonies that the Hebrews and did, and all the things that were necessary to conduct these sacrifice, and talking about the high priest and the everything about that. And it just it left me thinking that these people were free of a sin consciousness pretty much the entire year, and here I was, I could not keep the thought of me being in sin out of my head, but just long enough till I saw another billboard, you know.
Those dang billboards?
Yes, it's terrible. Just things in my life would happen, and I just was always in the state of sin consciousness, and these people were better off than me.
Before Jesus had died.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't think about those things. And I would learn more about the sacrifice and how Jesus was that perfect sacrifice. He was this perfect high priest. It just opened my eyes to a new thing about salvation and some things that I have missed. And it just cracked open my heart again, and I started looking in that direction. I think I met Mike Williams by chance maybe 2 weeks later after I listened to that tape.
How did that happen?
He was just coming to town, and... my aunt mentioned it, and I said, you know, I listened to his tape a couple of weeks ago, and where I would not have went, I really would like to go. I'd like to meet Mike.
So let me just explore something because I'm just curious. You listened to a tape, and you heard enough to make you feel, to make you want to believe it or to make you believe it?
It brought up questions. So I had come to my end with what I thought would save me, the law. The best way I can describe it is it brought up questions that I needed answered. The answers could possibly bring that life that I felt missing, could possibly bring that back into perspective as to who I am and the way God feels about me. I was in television for many years before this. I was an engineer at three of the stations in Mobile. I was master control operator, and I also did camera work and production and stuff like that. One of the stations was a quote-unquote Christian station, and I got plenty of legal and word of faith type teachings every day because I would put the programs on, do the commercials, and I would sit there at the board, and I would watch everything from the Jim and Tammy show to just whatever religious shows were on at that time. I got my feel. But so I was, it just opened up an opportunity for me to say, hey, there's something more to this. Let's go listen to Mike Williams. And I would like to know why he thinks this way.
So Mike Williams comes to town and you're off to see the wizard. What happened?
Well, I listened to him. Instead of a Bible preacher, he was just a Bible reader. He just read it.
So he's never changed in that
respect? No. He's the same today as he was first time I met him.
And when was that?
90? I want to say 96.
96, okay. Okay. So he was a Bible reader. Okay, sorry I interrupted.
No, he was just a Bible reader. And stumbling blocks that affected me was most of the people that taught me would be preaching a certain segment of a chapter and skip to another chapter and to another chapter, and then they would try to bring it all together. When Mike would teach, he just basically would read it from the beginning to the end, and it would make a lot more sense to me by doing that. And I got a lot more out of it that way.
Did you go out to the altar that night because you weren't good enough?
No, I didn't.
What happened that night?
Well, the first time I met him, I was still testing. I took what we had discussed back home, reread it over, and had some questions here and there, and wrote them down, and read it again. And then I think the next time we met, I would listen to him some more and just kind of test those theories and things that he would read, and it just made sense. It fit. Whereas before, a lot of the things that I was taught just never really made sense. You had someone telling me that God, Jesus loved me. He would take me just like I am 1 week, and then the next week it's like, well, you need to get right with God. You're separated from God. He loves you, but, he can't stand your actions anymore, and so you need to get right or you'll go to hell. And it was just an up and down roller coaster ride of emotions that drive most people crazy.
So now a lot of people talk many people say that you can't unring a bell, but I'm getting the impression that there was no bell rung. There was just this slow climb out of the mud. I'm almost getting the impression it was two steps forward, one step back, but it was forward motion. Is that how
that
it happened?
That is, it is. And once, once I fully understood the good news, the gospel, now, at that point, I could never go back. That was a Pandora's box for me.
How long was that journey?
I spent a good year testing the waters and listening listening to some more of his tapes and programs he had. But it just made so much sense, so much more sense than I had been taught. And I don't know exactly when it was, but it clicked sooner or later, and yes.
It was logical.
Yes, very.
So, okay, you've heard Mike, I guess, a couple of times by now. When did you say, hey, listen, when can we sit down and have a cup of coffee or something?
Yeah, right around 97, about a year later.
What, he kept coming back to town to preach?
He would come back, yeah. He would come back and do different meetings at some of my friends and family's homes. And at that point, I was so excited once I really grasped this gospel, what it really meant, and where that legalistic part of me gave a tenth of my income and did everything legalistically. And this new me had no limits. I wanted to shout it out to the world. I just, the way I felt, as free as I felt from where I came from, the suppression that religion put on me, and then not just put on me, but it transformed me to become Saul, so to speak. The moment I became Paul, I was so excited. That's when I got with Mike and said, I've got to do something here. Let's do a radio show.
You come out of self-loathing. You come into a time of questions. You stay in that process for a year or so, and one day you walk up to this tall fella and you say, we're going to do some work together.
Yeah.
Have I got that right?
Yeah, yes, that's about how it happened, yeah.
What happened then?
I looked at different methods of trying to get this gospel message out. For me, it's I'm an entrepreneur. I need the best bang for the buck. It's not always conventional methods. I looked at the internet, but the internet was so young still. There wasn't a YouTube. There was some streaming going on, but there wasn't a lot of people that were tuning into that. So I did find a radio station that had a morning hour open and was looking for – they had just changed hands as far as who owned the station, and they were looking for some money, basically. I had a little bit, and we negotiated some time there, and I said, Mike, if you can come to town, we can do a series of shows and have them broadcast. I would love that. I think that a lot of people would be able to hear the message. And of course, Mike agreed, and he came to Mobile and spent about a week with us, and we went each morning. And we did 46 shows.
Hour shows.
I believe they are an hour long. 46 shows, though.
Man.
I called them Sharing the Good News with Mike Williams.
How many people did that affect?
It reached quite a few people in the Mobile market. We heard it. Mobile picked it up, Pensacola. The station was centered in Bay Minette, which is sort of in between the two big markets. So it touched both markets. We had a lot of people call in that enjoyed it and really liked it. We had a lot of people call in and thought we were the devil. So we were getting phone calls. There are groups of people still today that get together and share the gospel. So we have different groups in Mobile that do. There were many lives that I know personally that were changed from kind of where I came from to the grace message. And so I would think it was effective. It was worth doing. I still have the shows.
So that was 97. What's happening now for you, mate?
Life changed a lot for me. I wasn't fighting for a personal fight against religion or getting myself right anymore. So I devoted more time instead of, I guess, fighting myself. I allowed myself to grow and use my talents in certain areas to grow a business. And I was free enough to do that. My mind was not constantly at war with itself. I did have a dark time with my divorce, though. That did happen.
Children?
I have two children.
How do you get on with the rest, the ex-family now?
We have different points of view on a lot of things. One of them is the gospel.
Was that one of the reasons for the divorce?
I think it was part of the reason. We had a different viewpoint on the gospel and the freeing nature that gives you. I don't think she understood that. And in fact, she was a little bit threatened. I can tell you a little threatened with Mike, as far as if Mike tells me I can do anything I want to do because God won't punish me, well, then I'm going to go do something. That was her fear. And I was trying to explain to her, people do what they want to do anyway.
Ain't that the truth?
The truth of the matter is, what I am, I am. And that part of me, I have no interest in going off and having, you know, affairs with women and whatnot. But I think that was kind of one of her fears. And then she's thinking, you know, kind of that she's worked hard to be a good Christian. And here I am, and I'm not working as hard anymore, I guess. I don't really understand exactly, but I do know that there was definitely a difference in the way we viewed the world. I spent most of that time being the person that I am, stretching myself, testing myself, growing in business, also personally. I was unrestrained during that period of time by religion. And being unrestrained, I found a part of myself that was able to grow.
What part of yourself?
Before I was freed, I would spend a lot of time in torment with a divided mind. I was constantly more worried about, am I right with God or not, rather than let's learn about a certain business or maybe quantum physics or just opening my mind and spending that time growing, learning.
Tell me if I'm drawing the wrong conclusion here, but it's sounding to me like you're saying the time you took up with self-loathing before and self-examination is now given over to creativity.
Yes, that's it. Very well said.
I don't know anyone who's heard this gospel who would say it differently. It seems to be something that is just one of the common threads in the gospel, that people, once they're free, the very first thing that happens is long, long, deep breath out. And then it's, well, let's see, where are we? Where do we go from here? And in your case, it was into business. And what brings you down to Houston now? What brings you down to Mike?
Well, I had actually contacted Mike about a month or so ago about coming to see him and sharing with him things that I have contemplated and read and studied, and all in this time that we had not seen each other.
What were you studying during that time?
Oh, the sky's the limit. I've dug into quantum physics. I've dug into some of the Gnostic texts. I've jumped into even some of the writings of Marcion. I have experimented and tested and played around with the idea of the law of attraction. Some of the things that I've listened to from such authors as Wayne Dyer, Greg Braden, even gotten into, and we haven't discussed this yet since I've been here, but some of the things from Zachariah Sitchin and the ancient Samaritan text, and just curiosity. I've allowed myself to open up and test, learn in areas I would never dare go if I was in a religious mind frame.
That's fascinating. I was saying to a group just a couple of days ago that I like reading people who disagree with me. I like reading people with whom I disagree, not for any other reason than I really want to get a full picture of the possibilities.
Yes.
I think that's the only way I can put it, really. And if there is some intelligence out there that would contradict something with which I have become comfortable, I could only grow through that.
I agree. We have spent the last day talking about many things.
And you're there for another few days.
Yes.
Meaning you've got a whole circus ahead of you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you're kind of, you like this. I can tell, I can read it in your face. You can't wait to get.
I can't. I've gone through that time. It's almost like two good friends had talked, and I had received this gospel message a decade ago, and it freed me. And now I went into the playground, and now I'm not restrained by religion. I've tested this and that, and I've read this and that, and some things I agree with, some things I don't, and all these things, and now I have an opportunity to come back and speak with Mike and say, you know, Mike, what do you think about this? What has happened in your life for the last decade? Let's compare notes and let's compare things, and it's wonderful to be able to do that with someone who's not going to judge you about.
Isn't it, though? We covered two or three different times in your life in religion. Tony, how old are you?
48. I just turned 48 December.
What would the Tony of today say to the Tony back going out to camp and at night having to switch from happy to self-examining? What would you say to that Tony?
I would say to that younger Tony at the camp, I would say, don't forget that inner Tony, that child Tony, that one that was born, that 4, 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old Tony that had no doubt about his relationship with his creator. That Tony that would sit on a swing and would just sing to the Lord because he just felt it. He just always felt very one with God. And don't let anything tell you that there's anything that can separate that. Nothing you can do can separate that.
Tell him where the better billboards were?
No. I don't care about the billboards.
The Tony that listened to that tape. What would you say to that, Tony?
I would say that the things that you've gone through to lead up to this point brought you to an end of trying to be righteous. And that what you're hearing now is going to explain a little bit as to why that legalistic approach would never get you right enough. It will explain to you why you already are.
Now, the Tony who was scribbling notes and listening desperately to tapes and then finally saying, hey, Mike, we can do something together. What would you say to that Tony? Or, unless you'd prefer, the Tony who now is free and he's just gotten out into the playground. What would you say to that Tony?
Well, to the one that is writing down notes and whatnot, I would say continue doing that. You need to feel confident in that the attention that you're putting towards understanding this is valid, and that you need to pay attention to those questions and those answers and continue on that course, because for yourself, and everyone's different, but for yourself and knowing your character, that would allow you to say, hey, I didn't just jump on some bandwagon. I did look into this. It does make sense. What surprised me is this gospel message is in each and every person. It's like a dormant message, a feeling that is in each and every person.
Gosh, it's almost as if it's not written on tables of stone anymore, but written on fleshly hearts. Is that what you'd...
Yes, exactly. And that scripture quote, I did reflect to that when I was going through that, yes.
Now, when you started playing in the playground and you're saying, what the heck, I'll see if there's a Rumi character or this Wayne Dyer character or if Oprah or if whoever, The Secret. And the feelings of, oh, I shouldn't touch that, that you once would have had, what would you say to that, Tony?
I would say that the foundation that gives you this freedom is the gospel message. It is the grace message. It is that's the foundation. And because you know that there's nothing ever going to separate you from your Creator, that that allows you to expand your consciousness to understand things. And some things you'll agree with and some things you won't, and some things that you don't, you later then agree to. You have that freedom of seeking truth, and you don't put a right or wrong. You're not looking at it through this veil of Moses. Is it right or wrong? You're looking at it, is it truth? And you're allowed to do that. Whereas before, you would not be able to do that. So I would tell that person to continue. Yes, this is good. It's okay to do what you're doing. When I got the gospel message and really understood how freeing it was, there was a point that I went through, a time that I went through, that I was almost angry with the religious organizations and the churches and all. I was convinced, and still I am today, that there are those that are in those organizations that were like me, ignorant of the truth, ignorant of the gospel, and thinking they're doing the right thing by doubling down with the people that they know and love, because they don't want them to go to hell. And so they make these things hard for themselves and people they love to take that heavy yoke. And it's already is bad for them to have to try to do it. And then they're putting it on others to try to do it. And I can see that part. And then I can also see an organization that knows exactly what they're doing, and they're manipulating.
What I'm hearing you say is wolves and sheeple.
Absolutely, yes. There was a time that I went through that I was angry with those institutions. Sometimes I felt like just going up in there in the middle of their sermons, on Sunday, and just say, people, this is not truth. This is not free yourself. I wanted to, the ship is sinking and you're on it. What can I do to help? And what you're doing here is horrible to these people. There was a time that I was just absolutely angry with these organizations. And I had to kind of step back and share the message in a loving way. And there will be some that have ears to hear, and there will be some that aren't ready yet. When I look back now, I hate that I wasted some time. I could have spent it on the playground learning. But at the same time, I have learned what deception is out there firsthand. And because of that, I feel better able to help people because I have experienced it. So in that sense, I feel like what I went through had a purpose.
You know, I love your analogy about the playground. When you, it reminds me of what Paul says in Galatians, it is for freedom you've been set free. When you're free indeed. When you're free, there is nothing that can throw you back into self-condemnation and guilt. There is nothing that can give guilt and shame power over you that it once did, because now you're free. Mm. And I don't know one GR who would not say, one gospel revolutionary who would not say that they have not experienced exactly the same thing. And we find that with our GRs. We find that some people go in some direction, some people go in another direction. But it's like Martin Luther King said, free at last. It's a great feeling, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Tony, I have a sense that we'll be hearing more from you and about you and probably through you, through Mike. And if there's anything that we can do here at the Gospel Revolution to help you on your way, we'd love to do that.
Well, it was a pleasure meeting you too.
Thank you, friend.
I'm always excited about speaking with people that know that gospel message, and it gives you a sense that we can talk about anything.
Doesn't it, though?
Yeah, it does, and I'd like to see more of that in humanity.
When we get the new website, we'll be able to put all of those CDs of yours up on the website, too.
Oh, that'd be awesome, yeah.
There'll be so much more possible than is now. Goodbye, Tony, and I hope we meet again really soon.
Well, goodbye, and I enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Don't forget to visit www.1mikewilliams.com and get your copy of Mike's book, One, The Gospel According to Mike. In that, Mike lays out the gospel in simple, straightforward language and weaves it with stories. Some of his stories don't make it into the book, and for good reason. But his good ones make it into the book about his personal experiences, which led him to the place of ultimate ease where he now lives. Hardcover, $27, paperback, $15, and a Kindle edition, a low, low, never to be repeated, seats a family of four in complete comfort, sugar reduced and salt-free, $3.03. Go on, don't be a meanie. Go out and just shell out $3 and have a listen to this gospel. A dollar a week, it's a pittance, but here at the Gospel Revolution, it can make all the difference for somebody just like you starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. We run a value for value model here. If you feel that you've received real value from this podcast, then I'm asking you to seriously consider donating a dollar a week or a dollar a day. Why don't you call our office on area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey Robertson about how you can participate. Or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. Perhaps you'd like to invite Mike to your area. Please do. It's easier than you might think. Call our office on the number we just mentioned with details, when, where, and why, and we will make that happen for you. You want to leave a message for Mike or a question for him to answer? Dial area code 234-564-0971 and leave a voicemail. You can find us on Facebook at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, All the Gospel All the Time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/Gospel Revolution. So now, good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Music City, Nashville, USA.
And good night from Mike Williams right here in Houston, Texas. Thank you, guys. Those of you that are participating in the pledge drive, we appreciate it so very much. We're off to a good start this year. Thank you. We love you a lot. And also, we appreciate Tony Blackman being on the show today, given his time to recount his story. Isn't it fantastic to hear people's stories from these ancient times of the Gospel Revolution.
Mate, they're all the same and they're all different.
They're all the same and they're all different.
Quite wonderful.
And goodbye from me as well. Tony Blackman from Mobile, Alabama.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
That,